Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:08 PM, and today is August 2nd. Well, it was a big day in markets with Apple finally surmounting the $1 trillion market cap and finishing on the high of the day. So this is, when we look at the trend, then we can see that Apple has been overextended relative to the trend mean on a number of occasions previously, and on each of those occasions it has pulled back towards the mean, and there have been two notable occasions on which it has pulled back significantly below the trend mean. Well, we had a somewhat more volatile pause between the end of 2017 and the middle of until about April. Then the market has broken higher. Apple is buying back a prodigious amount of its shares. It's increasingly adopting a subscription business model. And I've spoken at length previously about the way that that transforms technology companies' profile, because it turns highly cyclical businesses into much more reliable trending environments in terms of the predictability of their cash flows. Adobe was the first company to adopt that kind of model, and it has been trending higher in a very, not just consistent, but persistent manner for much of the last number of years. Well, a lot of people have been asking about, thinking about, what does the big pullback we've seen on Facebook mean for the wider market? That's an enormous downside weekly key reversal. The progression of higher reaction lows remains intact. It's right in the region of the trend mean. And the big question is whether this portends a problem for the wider technology sector, or whether it is singular to this individual stock. Well, Facebook has been one of the leaders. But the FANG sector generally, and I think that is increasingly being represented by the NYSE FANG Plus Index, which includes companies like Nvidia and Twitter, as well as Baidu and Alibaba. But it's been reasonably consistent on the upside. It has bounced from the region of the previous peak, and it was up an additional 80 points in here today. Well, that is obviously on the back of not just Apple's surge higher, but also because Google broke out last week. Microsoft has been trending quite impressively. Tesla bounced impressively in here today as well, on the back of a narrower loss, and also the potential that it will tap Chinese capital to build a battery factory there. So this has been an enormously volatile share, but it is bouncing from the $300 area, and it's back towards the $350 area as of today's move. So this is an impressive upside weekly key reversal that we're seeing following the deterioration that we've seen over the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks. So that's rather impressive on the upside. So when we think about then whether Facebook and the big pullback that it has had, and indeed that has been shared by Twitter, because both of those social media companies, they have to contend with policing their various environments, and that's one big cost that they're going to have to bear. Twitter, though, has I think reset now. It's unwound all of the advance that it put in the last few months. It's back in the region of the trend mean. This is about where, if it's going to find support, that we could anticipate that beginning to happen. I think a bigger question for a number of these kinds of companies is the environment that Google has. When we think about Africa, for example, many people equate the internet with Google. Most of us use Google on a daily basis. The markets that it hasn't been able to access, for example, China, with 1 billion users, well, it pulled out of that for both perhaps economic security and idealistic reasons. And now it's beginning to think about how to get back into the Chinese market. And then it also took on some government defense contracting work, and because of a revolt internally among some of its developers, it has eschewed that potential growth trajectory. But the question is, where else can Google grow? And that's a big question. Obviously, they are beginning to think about accessing markets that they hadn't looked at before. One thing that my daughter was telling me this morning was that ads are starting to pop up on YouTube on her Kindle device, whereas that had never happened before. So they are certainly moving to put ads in front of a greater number of people. Certainly use the Waze app, and 6 months ago it didn't have ads, now it does. It used to be able to run fine on an old phone that I have, which didn't even have a SIM card because it was picking up the signal from various cell towers, whereas now it requires an internet connection so that ads can be served when you're stopped in traffic. Well, these are all innovations in order to get more ads in front of existing customers, but the universe of potential new customers for these kinds of companies is drying up. It's going to become progressively more expensive to go out and find new customers. That's as true for Facebook as it is for Google. And of course, the big question is, what is Netflix going to do when it runs out of new people to find to sell its services to? The share has pulled back in a more dynamic manner over the course of the last 3 weeks than it has at any point since at least 2011. And if we look at that on a logarithmic scale for some perspective, well, we can see that it has pulled back by more in terms of percentage moves, but that was at a price that was a fraction of where we are today. And the PE ratio is in the order of 150 on an historic basis. So Netflix has still got plenty of countries that it can tap for additional new subscribers, but a lot of that bullish story is in the price. So when we look at the consistency of the FANG environment, then certainly there are potential issues out there on the horizon, but there's no great deal of evidence yet that it is starting to fray at the edges, that that index is continuing to trend higher, and it's doing so in a reasonably impressive manner. Amazon, which has been the totem for the sector for much of the last few years, is again overextended relative to the trend mean, but when we zoom in and simply look at the daily chart, reactions over the course of the advance since early April have been reasonably similar sized, and it's bouncing again from the most recent pullback. And as long as it is doing that, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Well, what else is going on in markets? The yield curve spread has been widening over the course of the last couple of weeks, and so far this is simply a consolidation within the context of a really quite consistent downtrend. We have seen rallies in the order of about 15 basis points on a number of occasions, and on occasion somewhat more than that as well, and that is something that we're seeing right now, but it doesn't really question the consistency of the medium term process of contraction in this particular yield, but it does arrest the accelerating trend that we had in June, and that is important because it's an inverted yield curve that gives us a lead indicator for the next recession. And if we see the curve starting to moderate, well, the contraction of the curve starting to moderate, well, that is reasonably good news. When we zoom in a little and look at just the short end of the curve, well, we know that the US government has to issue a lot more debt. They have been increasing the amount of debt that they've been issuing, and that was particularly the case in here today with a new batch of 2-month paper being being issued and expected, I think it is a $1 trillion deficit per annum expected from the new fiscal year beginning in October. And this continues to represent a reasonably consistent trend on the expansion of 2-year yields. It's up to 2.66%, so continuing to start to price in additional Fed rate hikes. Well, the Bank of England raised rates in here today as well, and the pound was down in a pretty dynamic manner against the dollar. I think the market is concluding that that was it was well, this isn't one and done because it's the second time that the Bank of England has raised rates, but I continue to think that the last time was really just an unwinding of the interest rate cut that they put in directly after the Brexit decision. So it's unlikely that we're in a new tightening cycle for the UK, that they're going to be very cautious, not least because the ECB is a long way from raising interest rates still. And but there is inflationary pressures in the UK, so they probably felt like they needed to raise rates. But this has been a pretty pronounced decline in the dollar, excuse me, in the pound against the dollar since the April peak. There's still a progression of lower rally highs, and the dynamics are very much favoring the downside. So really, a break in that progression of lower rally highs would be required to confirm a return to demand dominance. But considering the fact that there's still downward pressure on the euro as well, then the pound versus the euro continues to range above this 1.12 area, and it was quite volatile in here today. There is an interest rate differential between the pound and the euro now in the order of 130 basis points when you look out to 2 years on the yields. And that's a significant cost in terms of of shorting the pound versus the euro. So certainly there is continued angst about what exactly Brexit is going to entail, and there is a market in people beginning to think about what is what an unruly or a no deal Brexit might look like. And I think that is one of the reasons that the pound has been weaker. But the deterioration that we continue to see in the banking sector is, I think, worth considering here. We've had pretty good results on the trading front for Barclays from on the equity side, but not so great on the fixed income side. Lloyd's positive earnings were overshadowed by the continued shadow of the PPP, what is it, the missold selling of insurance products, the PPP problem that it's had, and that is continuing to weigh on the sector. But when we look at that on a weekly basis, we can see that now the index is encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. This is potentially the second lower major rally high since the beginning of this year. It's in the context of a much lengthier ranging pattern below 5,000 since 2009, and the lower side of that range is arguably around 3,000. So this is not bullish action, and a sustained move above the trend mean would really be required to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Well, when we look at the Euro Stoxx Banks Index, it was down today in a dynamic manner as well. If we zoom in and look at the biggest movers, we can see that just about, well, in fact, it's not just about, every single one of the banks was in negative territory. And the deterioration that we're seeing in GAM Holdings and the suspension of redemptions from its funds is not great news either. So I think people are worried about Facebook, but I don't think that it is the technology sector in the USA is really where the epicenter of risk is. If we look at where the deterioration that we're seeing is most evident, it's in Europe where we have the high yield spread continuing to expand. In fact, over the course of the last couple of weeks, the high yield spread in the USA has contracted. and that it is now back in the region of the trend mean. It would have to rally impressively and dynamically soon in order to defray the potential that it's a failed upside break. But that's not the case in Europe. The deterioration of the banking sector is still a problem. It's the potential that the ECB is making a mistake by unwinding its quantitative easing program is, I think, very clear and present. There is also the additional point that Europe is a lot more dependent on trade with China than the USA is, and China continues to deteriorate. It's China represents the epicenter of risk. This is the most pronounced downtrend that we see in the major markets. And it was down in dynamic territory again through the balance of this week, although off the lows in here today. We saw the first evidence of institutional support starting to come in last week, but it's going to need more to really convince investors that a low of more than short-term significance has been put in. When we look at the H-share index, again, it has bounced from that 10,500 point level, and it is oversold relative to the trend mean, but it really does need to do more. The downward dynamics are large, and we would give the benefit of the doubt in the most recent dynamic, which has been on the downside. I think that Tencent is among the clearest lead indicators for the market. It accelerated higher last year. It has lost momentum. It is breaking downwards. It's increasingly looking like a completed top. I think, considering the size of the dynamics that we've seen, that's the only reasonable conclusion. The big question will be, when we get an oversold rally starting to come good, will it be able to sustain a move back above the trend mean? So it's definitely in China where we have the epicenter of risk. And the renminbi continues to deteriorate. It's been used as a policy tool for much of the last 20 years, and there is nothing to really question that isn't still the case. So this has been a pronounced deterioration over the course of the last few months in the renminbi, and there is no question that that is influencing sentiment. Certainly something that Mrs. Tracy and I have been discussing since we got back was this feeling of unease that we've noticed in just generally among people in China. And I've been reading a couple of articles, I'll post them tomorrow, that people, observers of China, have been noticing the same thing. That the people are more on edge, that the civility generally has deteriorated, that there seems to be almost a fire sale attitude among people, that they just want to try and grab whatever is in front of them as quick as they can for fear that it will disappear. And what that suggests is that there is economic pressure coming to bear on China, that the withdrawal of support in terms of the shadow banking sector has obviously had an impact, and that we see evidence of that in the stock market, and we've seen it on the ground as well. And I think that is also a symptom of the deterioration that we've seen in the economy, that China is much more dependent on international trade than the USA is. The USA has got a very large domestic demand story than China does, and that's despite the fact that China's demand story has increased considerably, that the domestic economy has been revolutionized over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, but it's still very dependent on exports. So I think that's a rather important characteristic. If we think about what we're really seeing in terms of the messages that are being delivered by the market, that the clear risk out there is in China, that Europe is probably getting, or it has its own problems, and then it also has this exposure to developing issues in China that the USA continues to represent, where you have a strong currency and a strong stock market, and that is continuing to attract investor interest. Well, that won't last indefinitely, but I don't think that the USA is going to represent the epicenter of risk in the next big problem for markets. I think the clearest danger is that China has an unruly problem, most particularly because when we think about the property market, that's where a lot of the focus has been in terms of investor interest in China for decades, and prices are extraordinarily high relative to incomes. So these are potential problems. Now, obviously, you don't have the same level of consumer debt in China that you have elsewhere, but you have a lot of people with a lot of properties, and that is and people borrowing off of various different structures. So I don't think that that's an argument that really holds water to say that there isn't a lot of consumer debt. It's just not recorded in the same way. So that's certainly something that's worth keeping in mind. Then, when we look at the commodity markets, wheat prices today moved up towards that 600 cent level, but were not quite able to hold it. And when we look at that on a weekly basis, well, we can see that wheat prices have been volatile, and that there's been a progression of higher reaction lows this year, and the downtrend has been broken. But it is somewhat overbought in the short term, so it is at risk of some pause and consolidation. One of the I think important points is about about soybeans in China. It's a staple food, and that's important if we see a recovery in soybean prices. Soybeans have bounced from the 800 cent level. That's where they found support back in 2008. Well, we might see a retest of that low, but if we start to see prices for soybeans in China increasing next year, well, that's something that could lead to social unrest in much the same way that we saw that it was bread prices in Tunisia were a factor in the rise of the Arab Spring. And I don't think this is, I think, I guess, prognostication on my part, but it's something that I think is worth keeping an eye on. Well, in the precious metal markets today, gold moved to a new low and in a reasonably dynamic manner and closed on the low of the day. So this continues to represent a consistent downtrend. Reactions within it have been in the order of about $25, and a reaction or a rally of more than that will be required to really question that this isn't still a trending environment. When we look at it on the weekly basis, $1,200 is a potential area of support, but it's going to require a $30 rally to really question the downward bias and the supply-dominated environment that we have since it sustained the move below the trend mean. And I've still got my long position, but well, it's getting rather stressful continuing to hold it. Platinum prices were a little bit steadier in here today in early trading, but were not quite able to hold the advance all the way through the session. But $800 continues to represent an area of support, not least because it has been an area of support previously in both 2016 and again in 2008. But it's going to have to do more than it has already done to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And then when we look at copper prices, well, they're right back on their lows. We've seen some distribution over the course of the last 3 weeks, but nothing really to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. This has been a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It is a really quite clear a trend inconsistency, and a sustained move back above 300 cents would be required to question the supply-dominated environment. When we spin that out and look at the LME metals index, we have a similar story. Copper has represented a headwind for the entire industrial metals sector. Nickel prices were also down in here today and are now just trading below the trend mean. So now this is a big question whether it is going to be able to sustain a bounce from this level. I'll be closing my long position in nickel if we don't get a bounce tomorrow. And I think that's an important consideration, that nickel had been the best performing of the industrial metals this year, and now it is turning to underperformance, and that the trend has now sustained, or potentially if it sustains a move below the trend mean, it will have sustained a clear trend in consistency. So this is, I think, an important consideration. And then oil prices today were in positive territory. Brent was up about a dollar. But it's going to need to string together a number of days on the upside to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But oil prices have not sustained the same degree of a pullback that we've seen in the industrial resources. So far, this pullback has been mean reversion in nature, and we're continuing to see that support has been coming through in the region of the peak that we saw back in January. It's mostly unwound, it's overbought, overextension relative to the trend mean. So this is a natural area where we can anticipate support coming through, but it's going to be difficult for prices to sustain a move above $80. It's probably going to require a geopolitical event that would threaten supply to really get us there. Well, we can't rule it out. This is a fluid environment in terms of what's going on internationally, so there's nothing can be ruled out. But so far, with Saudi Arabia and Russia both ramping up production, that's likely to act as a headwind. And when we look at West Texas Intermediate, well, it was also up a dollar in here today, but $75 is an economic level for the vast majority of shale operations, and this is an important Rubicon for the market, and I do think it will require some kind of geopolitical event to send prices very much higher from where they've already reached this year. So when we think about the global picture, I think that it is quite clear that from the simply the relative strength that we're seeing in markets, the relative performance, and the arguments both for and against a bull market, that it's where China represents where the clear risk is, but obviously the overextensions and the very clear momentum-driven market that we're seeing on Wall Street is also a potential problem that's out there on the horizon. But there's no great deal of evidence yet that it's over. And we're still in the third psychological perception stage of this medium-term bull market. And quite often the third psychological perception stage climaxes in acceleration. And we're starting to see that, that there are some very large cap companies are becoming increasingly overextended. And these trends are still reasonably consistent. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.